This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down. Roger that.
Welcome to Trapping Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my trip till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trapping Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trapping Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do Trap Supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to deer camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't.
Hey guys, and welcome to Trapping Across America. This is Chip Davis sitting in with you as guest host for Clint, and I am coming to you from Springfield, Missouri at the 60th Annual National Trappers Association Convention, and it has been a great one. By the time you hear this, the show will have wrapped up, but this is Saturday, the last day of the show. Actually, we'll have a few activities still left for tomorrow morning, and we'll be getting out of here. But it's been a great show, and if you were here, I know you enjoyed yourself and learned a lot. And if you weren't, you sure did miss a good one. Guys, there's show season is still really in its early stages this summer. There'll be a show somewhere near you this summer and throughout the early fall, and make plans to be at those. These are great, great ways to network and meet people. So do yourself a favor and come out and enjoy some of these shows. Many of you are following along with what Clint's doing on the giveaway that happened yesterday. I know it aired on YouTube with we had $500-$700 worth of giveaways for Trapper Radio listeners and the contest. And so I know that has been done and taken care of. I know I saw a YouTube video pop up on my phone yesterday where that was recorded and live, so you can follow Clint on his Wolfer Nation channel there and see who won. You may want to check that because it might be you. So, well, guys, without getting into a whole lot of detail, you've already heard the sponsors on the first part of the show. As always, I like the old sponsors, but we've had a couple of new guys come on since then, so I always kind of like to circle around and catch those up. Jeff Dunlap from Dunlap Lures is a sponsor. We certainly appreciate that support. And also Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Mr. Allen up in Iowa is a great guy. Both those guys, all of the sponsors for Trapping Radio, are super, super good people to deal with. I deal with each and every one of them personally. I know them all. That's another really cool thing about these shows. You can come shake those hands, meet those guys. And they're supporting what you love. If you're listening to this show, they're the reasons that it's here. Give those guys a shot at your business. It's really kind of supporting the guys that support you is what it is when it boils down to it. So, well, I have got an awesome, awesome interview to bring you tonight, and I am so excited about this. I'm sitting across the table in my camper from a guy that I have looked up to and admired and respected for many, many, many years, even in the years that I wasn't trapping as hard maybe as I am right now. But I have the privilege to be sitting across from Mr. Rob Keck. And Rob, go ahead and kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Hey, Chip. Well, thanks so much for having me here. Boy, this is more fun than a barrel of monkeys being here at the 60th convention of the National Trappers Association. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, even though I served 30 years as the CEO of the National Wild Turkey Federation and was so much involved with bringing wild turkeys back to virtually every state, into the Canadian provinces, working in Mexico, I have a love for trapping as well. Today, I also work, after 30 years at the Federation, working for Johnny Morris and Bass Pro Shops as Director of Conservation, on a member of the Redhead Pro Hunting Team. I host our weekly radio show on Sirius XM every Saturday morning and afternoon, Sirius 147. And then I chair the board of America's best new attraction, the Wonders of Wildlife National Museum and Aquarium. And it was also selected by USA Today, a poll, that it was a top aquarium in North America. So I handle a lot of different duties, but it's all about things that I love. And, I found that passion is the emotional gasoline that carries an individual to higher levels of success. And, having been known as a turkey hunter and a guy that, I was the first one to take a turkey in every state in the United States. I've taken them in Canada and Mexico, Guatemala, New Zealand. But I've also have a deep passion for trapping. I look back over the years and, it was back in 1957. I was 7 years old. And to catch that first muskrat and that stop loss, that number one Victor stop loss, that long spring, I think about how that really was the beginning of helping launch me into a career of conservation. And, that passion that developed, it's still just as strong today as it was back then. And, I oftentimes tell people that trapping has helped me become a better turkey hunter. In turkey hunting, positioning is so, so important. In fact, probably number one. So it is with trapping, as we all know. You look out across the landscape and you say, I want that red fox to put his foot the size of a 50-cent piece. Trap location, just like turkey hunting setup location, are really keys to success.
Absolutely.
But, anyway, it's just great to be here, you know, to come to this convention. Many of my old heroes, I mean, whether it's Slim Peterson to, you know, you name it, these are the people I look up to as well. You know, I think about my early days and where I got my education in trapping. Well, this came through the school of hard knocks like a lot of people back in the old days before we had videos and, you know, books were limited. But I got a lot of it out of Fur Fish and Game. I got it out of the Pennsylvania Game News. And I found a couple trappers that shared a little bit of information. And, you know, it's just one of those kinds of building blocks of learning experiences that, you know, ultimately led me into a world of conservation, of putting back more than we take away, to try to help people understand that we've got a huge responsibility, in trying to have something to pass on to the next generation. So anyway, it's great to be here with you. And Chip, I know you were part of our NWTF chapter there in Mississippi.
That's right, yep. We also share the passion of turkeys. That's what you mentioned, a few keywords just a moment ago: passion, turkeys, and trapping. And I certainly, to put it all together in one sentence, those are my recreational passions in life. Is I sure do love to chase the turkeys. I've talked on this very show a lot about my turkey adventures and different things, and I've kind of followed in your footsteps and tried to shoot a turkey in every state and well down the road there. I think we're like 9 or 10, but we're closing that gap in quickly. And but at the same time, trapping is also equally as passionate. But the locations, everything that you said is spot on. Is there's so many parallels, and not so much I think with other venues of hunting, but turkey hunting and trapping really go hand in hand. I tell people a lot of times, kind of, both of them are kind of a thinking man's game, and you've got to, you know, you got to plan and locations, and there's so many things that go into that. Well, you talked about your trapping career early, and so let's just kind of touch on that real quick. And sure. I got a few little segues and topics I want to cover with you. But let's just start with the trapping. You're a Pennsylvania guy, is that right?
That's right. I grew up in Pennsylvania and remained there until 1978. And at that time, I took off for the South to South Carolina to go to work for the National Wild Turkey Federation. Mm-hmm. But Pennsylvania is where I got my start. And, you know, one of the things that really lent itself to focus on trapping was that a kid couldn't get a hunting license until he was 12 years old. And, you know, with that passion, that desire that was building, you know, after watching my dad and my uncles and neighbors and friends that were hunting, how was I going to get involved that I could, you know, that I could take a critter and do it legally and ethically? And, you know, trapping was the way to do it. It was the open door that said, okay, you can catch a muskrat, you can catch a coon or a possum or a skunk. And, you know, that's where it just sort of laser focused on trapping, because there weren't really many other opportunities as far as a hunter was concerned.
Did you carry that on as you moved to South Carolina when you left PA?
Well, I certainly did. And, you know, one of the things that opened my eyes when I moved to South Carolina was the fact that there was no minimum hunting age. And that later then led me to lead the way in what ultimately became known as Families Afield, of breaking down barriers so that we didn't have age restrictions in states that were keeping kids out of the field. You know, we clearly saw through research that the recruitment age of hunters, that window is between 5 and 10. And when you make a kid wait till he's 12 years older, I look at the state of New York, a kid could not hunt a white-tailed deer with a firearm until he was 16. Wow. I don't need to tell you how tough it is to recruit a kid after he's 16 years old.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really tough. So when I moved to South Carolina, and I saw so many young kids there that, you know, their first squirrel, their first rabbit, their first turkey, their first deer. And that really led me then to move in that direction. And I can tell you, we just went over the 2.5 million mark of recruitment of hunters. We broke down the barriers in 42 states. We got age restrictions either eliminated, And I was so happy because Pennsylvania was the first state we got it done. I wanted to go back, and we wanted five states the first year. I said, I want to go after one of the biggest. And we got it passed in the House, 197-1, unanimous in the Senate. I got to introduce the governor at the bill signing. Mm-hmm. And he said, I've never seen a piece of legislation go through the legislature so quickly and with such wide support. And, you know, today, a kid can hunt at any age up there, of course, under parental guidance, under the mentoring program. And I think it's really important when we look to the future of hunting, trapping, you know, we've got to engage these kids early. And so, anyway, when I moved to South Carolina, I saw that. That was one of the things we did at NWTF, but also saw a tremendous opportunity in trapping. I moved down there, and I just took for granted everybody trapped in South Carolina like they did in Pennsylvania. Well, I had my eyes open. At that time, in the late 70s, if a guy wanted to trap, he had to get the majority signatures of the legislators, that legislative delegation in a game zone. In my case, it was game zone 2. So I had to go visit each one of them and get their signature. And once I had that, then the door was open.
Wow.
And the trapping season was January and February. And I was used to, you know, running, starting a line around Thanksgiving, you know, and getting a jump on things. And, you know, with my work at the Federation, as you well know, banquet season really started cranking up the end of January and February. So I just had a limited window. But what I saw, man, I saw foxes, cats, I mean, just worlds of raccoons and what have you. And, you know, that first year, running steel in that sandy ridge country of Edgefield County, South Carolina, I remember taking 50 foxes. And, of course, most of those were reds. At that time, there wasn't a coyote to be found anywhere in that part of the world. A few grays and the cats. I mean, that was my first experience trapping bobcats. And, man, what a thrill it was. And at that time, I was dating my wife. She didn't know what to think about trapping to start with. And, of course, I had a fur shed, and, you know, the pelts were beautiful, and she loved all of that. And we took off one day and headed a fur buyer up in Pennsylvania, outside of Hanover, Pennsylvania, and he always treated me well, and he said, I'll take good care of you. And anyway, that was when red foxes were like $75.
Right.
Coons were $30. I mean, southern bobcats, $150. And my wife was staying there. It was early on a Sunday. It was like 6 a.m. We'd driven all night taking that load of furs up there. And he started piling up those $100 bills. My wife looked at her and said, you know, I really like that trapping stuff. But anyway, you know, that passion has continued. And getting into water trapping, I mean, the world of the beaver in the South is just limitless.
Right, absolutely.
And, you know, I grew up water trapping, and, you know, just that a beaver's a little heavier to carry out than a packed basket full of muskrats.
Exactly, exactly. Well, tell us a little bit about how you transitioned over to the NWTF days. Obviously, you were with the National Wild Turkey Federation for numerous years. And so just kind of tell us a little bit personally about how that happened.
Well, I started off going to Millersville State. It's now University of State College. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, my degree is in art illustration. Most people don't even realize that. And anyway, at my senior year, the head of the department came to me and said, look, we've got a teaching position in Center City, Lancaster, and we have had 9 straight years of turnover in this position as the art teacher in junior high school. And he said, we think since you were physically, I played football and was on the track team and what have you, and said, I think you'd be an imposing figure as well as a great teacher. And what we'll do, he said, I saw that you had 15 free electives that last semester. If you take the 15 education credits, we'll waive student teaching. And so I said, well, that sounds like a good deal. I have a teaching certificate, and if it doesn't work out, I can still go into art illustration. Mm-hmm. I already had a job offer with Armstrong World Industries. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I ended up teaching 5.5 years. Only 1 year, I made the 10th turnover. I moved back up to the mountains of Pennsylvania and had a great trout stream at my back door and plenty of red foxes to trap up in that country. And then, you know, came the calling. I was a competitive turkey caller, and I lived in a county where it was just a hotbed. I mean, there were so many good callers, guys building calling devices. Ended up winning the Pennsylvania State Calling Championship. I won the U.S. Open. Then went to Mobile, Alabama, and won the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And it connected me with a lot of people in this fledgling organization known as the National Wild Turkey Federation. And I put on seminars and clinics. And at the same time, when I was teaching, there was a company which was really the largest turkey call producer at that time. It was Penn's Woods mm-hmm. Products. And so I did some audio tapes and put on in-store promotions and clinics and made appearances and what have you. And one day I got a call from the president of the board of NWTF, said they had an opening, and wanted to know if I was interested. And I said, I'm pretty happy. I'm single. I can hunt, fish, and trap and not to worry about anything. I said, and I love the South. I really, you know, always have. And anyway, and I'd made some trips down there turkey hunting. Mm-hmm. And Alabama, in fact, Alabama is where I killed my first spring gobbler. Wow. way back in the 60s. So anyway, they were persistent and invited me to come down to a board meeting in Pineapple, Alabama. And I said, give me 2 weeks. And I went back home, talked to my parents, talked to the superintendent of the school district. They were all supportive. In fact, the superintendent said, look, if it doesn't work out in South Carolina, I'll have a job for you back here in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
I never looked back. And, you know, spent 30 great years building a team. And it was at a time, you know, sometimes timing is everything. And you know, there were only 30 states that even had turkey seasons mm-hmm. back then. Mm-hmm. And went to work, you know, building relationships and partnerships with all the state fish and wildlife agencies, and then we helped move. We orchestrated lots and lots of moves of wild turkeys. We were involved in funding research, and then we built a chapter system that, you know, when I left there, we had 2,400 chapters. We had over 500,000 members and a budget of over $70 million. And it was a far cry from when I started, when there was 150 chapters, you know, 10,000 members, and a budget of $300,000 a year. And, you know, it's just, it was amazing how many people were so interested in, you know, in the wild turkey. And of course, you know, looking at turkey management, I'll never forget one of the early research projects was in Land Between the Lakes, there in Tennessee and Kentucky. And they were having tremendous problems. They couldn't figure out why turkey reproduction wasn't happening. We had 100 dummy turkey nests set up with cameras on them. Well, guess what? They found out that predation with raccoons mm-hmm. was the culprit. 99 out of 100 had coon predation on those nests. And at that time, they only had a one coon limit and a one night a week allowance for hunting. So what they did was up the limit, up the number of days, and just like that, the turkey population exploded.
Right.
So, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, coon trapping and coon hunting really lent itself to allow a species like the wild turkey to explode. And so, you know, it was just full, those 30 years of many, many great wildlife experiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly worked tirelessly in your years there with the Turkey Federation. That's where you and I first met back in, I guess, the early 90s probably.
Yeah.
And You mentioned the predation, so, and this is something I wanted to talk about, and we'll circle back around to this, but I think that it's so important in our approach. So I'm going to probably get ahead of myself in the conversation here a little bit, but because I want to talk about the transition between NWTF and Bass Pro, which is your position now as
right.
Director of Conservation. But getting ahead of myself a little bit, I want to talk about something that we did along with Bass Pro in Mississippi last year. We held our first ever convention in Mississippi. Mississippi Trappers Association is historically been a little bit small. We're a southern state that obviously that, but we still got folks that trap. And we may not have the numbers, but we have equal love and equal passion for
sure.
for what we do out
Absolutely.
there.
Absolutely.
We've been around since the 70s as well, but we just really kind of never had a convention. We had a meeting once a year, had a first sale, and that was about it as far as our association. We had grown to the point that, so we really want to take the next step, and we started looking around for venues to have a convention. Lo and behold, Bass Pro has a store, super, super nice store, just outside of Jackson, Mississippi in Pearl. And we visited with the staff there, and they were so incredibly gracious, welcomed us in. We formed a partnership that I think will last forever. But this is the message, segueing back to the predation and how important trapping plays a role on turkey hunting. There is a different approach, and this is what we used with our convention that we had at Bass Pro. It was not so much a convention about how to catch a raccoon or how to catch a coyote. It was more, our approach was more, would you like to see more turkeys on your hunting property? Would you like to see more, you know, more fawn recruitment on your deer lease? Those are the type of approaches. Now, obviously, having the store, having our convention at that particular venue, opened our audience to many, many non-trappers, and so we chose that approach, and we exposed over 1,000 people to trapping through a wildlife predation and wildlife management type of approach that otherwise would have never been introduced to the sport, or maybe kind of had a dark cloud over trapping in the back of their head. So,
well, I think, you know, you've hit upon something that is so important. And I think it goes well beyond hunting. It's really putting a positive face on trapping. Mm-hmm. Putting a good, positive face on hunters and of all sportsmen. You know, today we are getting killed in social media and the way we present ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the approach that you took was one that maybe took some of the emotion out of the issue, mm-hmm. and really focused on what does it achieve. And, you know, if you're a land manager, if you're a wildlife manager, and let's say you're managing for wild turkeys, obviously you got to have good habitat, mm-hmm. but there's other things that are involved that are equally as important. And we have seen that predator control can make a difference, just like the illustration that I mentioned there, Land Between mm-hmm. the Lakes.
Absolutely.
And so when you look at today's landowners, you know, with this huge group of aging baby boomers, we've seen a real explosion of what I call hobby farmers. Mm-hmm. They want to know how to manage their land, you know, how to have timber, but how to have a place where they can see turkeys and deer and quail and all kinds of wildlife, and they don't know how to do it. And I think when you bring them in and show them a much broader picture, trapping is one of those components that's very important mm-hmm. in that. And I think it really helps defang the objection that some people say, we're just going to come in there and trap these critters out of there.
Right, right.
When, you know, you could put this thing in a more logical presentation. I go back to the social media comment. You know, we have got to be tasteful in the way we present ourselves to the general public. I think that, you know, we are getting killed, not only in social media, but even on outdoor television with some of the videos that are there. I mean, we have got to remember that it may not only be hunters and trappers that are looking at these photographs, looking at these videos, but a much broader general public. And if the antis pick up on that, they use it against us. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to clean up our act at every opportunity that we can, put that positive spin, and so that young people can pick up on this, that you know, there's a legal, there's an ethical, and there's really a positive way to present what we do. Mm-hmm. I think we have to also understand that, you know, as we look at those people that object to us trapping, it's a much bigger issue. It's anti-plant and animal use. Mm-hmm. You know, there's groups out there that focus on anti-meat, others that anti-dairy, those that are anti-poultry, anti-animal use in medical research, anti-zoos and other places where animals are held captive, you know, in a responsible way. And so we've got to look at this picture in a broad way, not just focused on trapping. But I think when we do that, we help bring in other partners. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, I spoke at National Dairy Summit out in Denver, Colorado. They asked me to come as a keynote speaker. And the reason they asked me to come was that they saw, and they heard this through my radio shows on rural radio, mm-hmm. and Sirius XM, talking about some of the issues that hunters face. And they said, you know, those are the same issues that we as ranchers and farmers and producers from the land face as well. And I think that we have got to make sure that we bring in those other partners. I think from the ag community, we need to form a stronger partnership maybe than ever before, so that we can together join our forces to counteract the stuff out there that's trying to put us out of business.
I totally agree, and that's where the strength comes from. You know, certainly, I think sometimes just in the genre of trapping, we can be our own worst enemy through the social media pics and through, you know, through the catches that are maybe not tasteful and put out there. That's ammunition for the, yeah, you know, for the opposite side. When we can build these groups, we gain numbers and we gain strength and we gain dollars and we gain, because the what we collectively typically refer to as antis, and the listeners of this podcast will certainly relate to that term. But they're passionate too. We're passionate about what they do, but they're equally as passionate. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got more dollars than we do. There's
significantly probably, more dollars.
They probably have more numbers than we do as far as people.
Well, what they're doing is generating those dollars on the emotion, absolutely, of an unknowing American public. You know, I had an experience back in January. I was a keynote speaker up the Pennsylvania chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation's annual deal there at State College. And I'd gotten in there a little bit. It was right after typical lunchtime, and so I went into the restaurant there at the convention center. I was the only person in there besides the waitress. So I sat down, there was a big screen TV on, and there was some kind of athletic event on there. And anyway, the waitress came over to take my order, and there on the screen was this picture of a snow leopard caught in a steel trap, and it was sponsored by the World Wildlife Fund. And she said, "Gosh, isn't that awful?" I said, "Honey, do you really understand what you're looking at up there, and that's not necessarily the way it is out there?" She said, "Well, just wait a minute. Let me tell you." She said, "You know that red foxes are endangered?" I said, "Really?" I said, "Where did you get that information?" Well, she pulled up on her iPhone something had come from the Sierra Club that talked about how the numbers of red foxes were dwindling to a drastically low number. She said, "You know, there's only 50 red foxes left in the United States." I said, "Honey," I said, "you illustrate a symptom of a problem out there where you've got groups that are playing on your emotions, but it's not true." I said, "You probably got 50 red foxes within a square mile of where we're sitting right now. And we have got to do a better job in being proactive."
Absolutely.
We are getting beat at the punch. When you look at all the anti-ads that are out there on major network television, on cable television, but where do you see the positive promotions of what we do? And I know it's limited on dollars because the other side, playing on the emotions, taking all these dollars from the unknowing American public, it allows them to purchase these kinds of ads in magazines, on television, on radio. And we have got to get smarter about the way we play this game. You cannot win a defensive game. The only way you're going to win is if you're on the offense. And we have got to pick our game up from where we're at right now.
I couldn't agree more. Having said that, I think we get complacent sometimes. We're at the National Trappers Association convention. If I've got a beef with NTA, and I sit on the board of directors and find myself becoming more and more and more involved in the association and the organization, what we are doing poorly is getting the message out of what NTA is truly doing. We're winning on the legal front. We're winning in the courtroom, mm-hmm. so far. That comes from putting together an extremely talented team of men and women to fight this.
You bet.
I just wonder how long we'll be able to continue this without an offensive game. We've been playing defense. I couldn't have termed that any better.
I mean, that's it. I mean, we are just playing defense, and we have, you know, we've got to find some good spokespersons as well within our hunting and trapping community. We lack that. When you see, you know, back before Wayne Pacelli ran into his little mess at HSUS, you would see him on national news addressing different issues, whether it was the African elephant or Cecil the lion or whatever it happens to have been. They were out there in front taking their shots at us. I mean, and just we had no response. There was nobody from the hunting community that was on Fox News. And I just about threw up when I saw, you know, they were interviewing Pacelli and he was talking about, you know, gosh, how terrible it was. And I'm thinking, okay, who from our side needs to respond? Or when are we going to take the initiative when we do some good things to get on national news to exhibit the positive impact that we have?
Right, right.
We've got to find spokespersons within our community that can speak intelligibly, speak with accuracy, and speak with some passion. Because as we've used this word passion here a number of times on this show, that passion can be contagious to those that even don't hunt and fish. It will bleed over and they're saying, you know, these guys are right. Maybe we need to support them instead of this other side.
Absolutely. We've talked a lot about national approaches, but I think that starts at the local level, at your district. Guys that are listening to this, join your state associations. Even inside that, attend your district meetings, your local meetings. That's the entry point. That's where you sign up to play in the game.
Sure.
And it grows from there. I would just so highly encourage the listenership to, if you're not already involved, become involved, because it starts with you. We've got to have those numbers. We've got to have the trappers. And out of that, you know, it may or may not be for everybody, but you go to the next level. You get involved with, you know, in a bigger way with your...
You got to have the dollars there as well. You know, when I ran the Wild Turkey Federation, what a lot of people don't realize that, you know, when I took over, every year in my budget, I had money in there for the National Trappers Association. And there were people looked at me and saying, why do you have that line item in there? I said, because it's important to our future. As we all know, hunting and trapping have been under attack for a long time. It's not just the last couple decades. I mean, it has been there for quite a while, but it's intensified. And that if we don't take the initiative to try to bring in other industries, other NGOs to support what we do, we all lose. And so for, you know, the 27 of those 30 years that I was the CEO at the NWTF, I can tell you every year there was money in there for NTA. And I think that it would be smart if NTA went to some of these other groups, especially those that, you know, well, I mean, you look at whitetails, for example. I mean, there's enough research out there to show that coyote predation on fawn is huge. Well, and so, you know, with being over 10 million whitetail hunters in this country, we ought to be able to generate some bucks out of that.
Absolutely. And, yeah, it's interesting you said that. That's exactly where my brain was going with the next question I was going to ask you. Or actually more, not question, but comment, is in our board meetings at the early part of this week, we always meet as the National Board at Convention. That's where the conversation is going. There's talks of building a coalition, not only with the trapping organizations, but reaching across to the deer guys, to the turkey guys.
Absolutely.
You know, to the quail guys, to the elk guys. You know, there's so many things, and that's how we're going to have to get to that level before we can build an offense right now, but before we build a professional NFL quality offense, I think we're going to have to form these coalitions and these unions and work together with all those guys. I remember years and years ago when I first started my trapping career, you know, the coon dog guys didn't like the trappers, and the trappers didn't like the coon dog guys.
I ran into that when I moved to South Carolina. There were no trappers, but there were coon hunters. And when they found out what I had done and getting the majority of the legislative delegation to sign that it was okay to trap, I mean, I had my life threatened. And I sat down face to face with them and told them just exactly how it was with trapping. And that I wasn't out there to take their sport away. I wasn't out there to catch their dogs in a number two, you know, coil spring. I mean, and, you know, some of the guys that threatened me the most became really good friends afterward. And so, you know, it becomes a challenge. It really does within our own ranks. And, you know, we have got to respect each other's turf, so to speak. But understand that it's all of our turfs.
It absolutely
is. I mean, we can either hang separately or we can hang together. And that quote's been used many times in a lot of different places, but it's just as applicable here as it is anywhere. We have got to hang together as partners, as sportsmen and women, to make a difference.
Absolutely. That's so important. I just don't think we can talk about that enough. And that's the vision. I know that's the direction the NTA is going. That's the next step is to form bonds between we're all enjoying the outdoors. That's what we're doing. You know, in a consumptive manner many times, and that's okay. But when we can make these alliances and we can partner up, then I just think you can keen your sights in much more specific and have many more opportunities probably and many more resources, not necessarily just monetary, but many more angles and many more contexts that you can do to in this fight that we're in.
Well, we live in the golden years of wildlife. You know, when you look at the turn of the last century, back 1900, when wildlife populations, I mean, right where we're sitting, you know, the Midwest, the upper Midwest, New England, turkeys were gone, whitetails were gone, black bears were gone. Many, many critters were gone or close to being gone. And, you know, it took some leaders like Theodore Roosevelt and George Bird Grinnell and Gifford Pinchot and John Muir and others to build a conservation ethic. And we are part of that conservation totem pole. We've got to recognize that. And we got to be thankful for where we're at. And unfortunately, so many people, when times are good, they become complacent and say, oh, they're not going to take it away from us, or it's not going to change. It only seems like we respond when our backs are up against the wall. Well, let me tell you, our backs are against the wall, and anybody that thinks that they're not, their head's in the sand. And we're fiddling while Rome's burning, but we have an opportunity to partner up. And to really, I think, showcase in a positive way what we do. You know, so many times we're secretive about what we do. You know, I remember back in those early days of the Federation, man, I took hits from a lot of the old-time turkey hunters saying, man, all you're doing is creating more turkey hunters out there. And it was like their jealousy. You know, they didn't want their turf impeded upon by new turkey hunters flooding the woods. I said, look, you got to understand one thing. We're putting more turkeys out there, and there are more turkeys now than when you started. And I think that it took a while, but eventually they saw the light, that the work we were doing, the conservation work we were doing, was benefiting everybody. Yeah, there are more turkey hunters, but there's more turkeys. And, you know, when I think about what trapping did for me as a person, I mean, certainly it led me into a career of conservation. But it also taught me a lot of life's lessons. I mean, whether it was the responsibility of checking my trap line every day, the responsibility of taking care of that fur that I was skinning it out, you know, and fleshing it and stretching it, taught me how to manage money when, you know, sold those furs. And, you know, just so many important qualities that are just so important to day-to-day life. And, we miss that opportunity when we don't reach out maybe where we could.
Absolutely. I totally agree with what you're saying. Let's kind of change the direction real quick, because I've got an idea in my head that I'd love to discuss with you as we begin to work toward the end of this show. Where we were in our kind of our timeline, I guess, is we talked about your involvement with NWTF and in your whole entire career there and lots of things there. Talk about the most recent change and how that happened and talk about your position a little bit with Bass Pro and explain kind of what that is, because I know you guys have a lot of things going on.
Well, we do, and I got to go back. It was in 1979, I met Johnny Morris and his dad, John A., down in Central Florida. In fact, it was right after Disney was built, and Orlando was trying to attract industry and business there to Central Florida. And anyway, met John and John A., and we developed a friendship back then. It was on a turkey hunt. It was called the Florida Deseret Turkey Hunt. And, you know, through the years, that relationship grew. John became a big supporter. Johnny was our honorary chairman at our national convention in Nashville at Opryland, and you know, brought in a lot of country music star power for us, and you know, brought dollars to us and assisted in so many different ways. And so we continued that friendship and his support, and even to this day, the biggest cash supporter and in-kind supporter of any entity out there, individual or corporate. And so when I ended my career at NWTF after 30 years, John had asked me to come to work and jump on board with a great team, and I was so honored to do that. Started out on the Redhead Pro Hunting Team, and then John's commitment to conservation, it is unmatched. He is the corporate conservation leader, Bass Pro Shops, Cabela's, I mean, all that is one. Leading the way of putting more back than they ever take away. And John, of course, knowing my conservation background, said, I want to build a conservation team here at Bass Pro Shops. And so I, along with Martin McDonald at that time, we really began to reach out and work in an even greater capacity with all the NGOs, the non-governmental mm-hmm. conservation organizations, but also then with all the state agencies and the federal wildlife resource agencies. A little bit later then in time, Bob Ziemer, when he left the Missouri Department of Conservation as their executive director, he came on board. And we really built a team that is so focused on so many different aspects. Johnny has led the way in trying to, in what was called the Morris Deal Act, on improving things with saltwater fisheries. We got some huge problems there we had to overcome, and a lot of times government didn't understand there's a difference between recreational and commercial fishing. But one that was even bigger, in my opinion, was the fact that our state fish and wildlife agencies are strapped for cash. License revenue doesn't cover the cost of bills. The Pittman-Robertson money that comes in, the excise tax, firearms and ammunition, not covering the bills. And he, along with former Wyoming Governor Dave Friedenthal, were part of a Blue Ribbon panel to try to find ways in which we could generate what the agency said they needed was $1.3 billion annually. That bill, which a bill resulted from that, it was introduced yesterday in Congress with Representative Fortenberry from Nebraska, and Representative Debbie Dingell from Michigan, Democrat and Republican, and has widespread support. And we're hoping that this is going to lead the way to bring more money into these agencies, which ultimately will have some impact, positive impact, with trapping. And so those are just some of the kind of things there that we're involved with. But at the same time, it was back in 92, I was on a turkey hunt with Johnny and John Anderson, the country singer, and a good friend. We were pitching bubblegum worms that afternoon on the strip pits of Calhoun, and John said, I've got an idea. He said, I want to build a museum and an aquarium that honors the contributions of hunters and anglers. And he said, would you help me with it? Well, of course, sure. Well, here we go. You know, just 2 years ago, we opened reopened, the Wonders of Wildlife National Museum and Aquarium, and I was chairman of the board of that entity, and just so proud of the conservation leadership that John has brought together, and
that is in Springfield.
That's right at the Granddaddy store. Mm-hmm. It's attached to the Granddaddy store, and when you go to that Granddaddy store, you've also got the NRA's National Sporting Arms Museum, which is really a history of our country, but over 1,000 historic firearms in there. You've got the Archery Hall of Fame, but then you've got the wildlife galleries. In fact, right now, Boone and Crockett's 30th Big Game Awards going to take place August 1, 2, and 3, right there. And in fact, last night I went and I toured the displays of, you know, all these record book animals, Big Game of North America, that are on display to the general public at no charge. Mm-hmm. And
well, guys, if you're traveling through or ever have an opportunity to be in that Springfield area, we got into this show on Sunday. Our meeting started on a Monday afternoon. So my son and I, we travel in a camper to these shows, and we had a few minutes to spare. We actually had a chance to go through and see the museum, see the aquarium. Is absolutely spectacular. Guys, I cannot encourage you enough. This it will blow your mind. I don't even know that I can put it into words of the awesome job that these guys have done with this. It is truly just unbelievable. My only regret there is I needed 2 days instead of a few hours.
You can't do it in a few hours. You know, it really captures a lot of history of this nation, from the Native Americans through Lewis and Clark, through the time of Roosevelt, and when wildlife was at a low point, to where we are today. And, it just celebrates what hunters, anglers, trappers have done. And it is the only museum and aquarium that honors hunters, trappers, and anglers. You can go to the Smithsonian, nothing even begins to compare to it. Most of those others don't even acknowledge the contributions of what we as outdoorsmen and women have done, you know, to bring back wildlife and to have it in the sustainable way that it is today. And so if you love wildlife, if you love the outdoors, if you like hunting and fishing and trapping, you just need to come there. But don't have just a day.
Absolutely.
It's going to take you 2 days to go through if you want to absorb everything that's there.
Right. You're right. It is unbelievable. Bass Pro's dedication and undying support for what all of our passions are is unmatched. There's and even stronger now that you guys have partnered with Cabela's, and Bass Pro is now one and the same entity, I understand. So that is... I know we as sportsmen certainly appreciate what you guys do. Hunters, fishermen, and trappers, I don't know that I know any trappers that don't participate in something else, whether it be hunting or fishing.
Well, it comes from the heart of Johnny Morris, and just like, our commitment in funding, the reprinting of the Trapper's Handbook, with that focus on young people, on youth and our future. I mean, we have got to spend more time in that area, and it's one of the big commitments of Johnny Morris, Bass Pro Shops, Cabela's.
Right. Well, that's where I was going with that, and I wanted to let the listenership know, even on this convention, how that support goes beyond just hunting, beyond just fishing, but trapping and the support for this very convention. You guys were the main and major sponsor in a real and huge way, and that's exactly what I was going to discuss, is these handbooks that you guys have partnered with us on, and from the National Trappers Association standpoint, and that's huge. That gets it in the hands of our target. Our target is the youth. We've got to have the youth for our future. And earlier on in the show, we had mentioned the right age group. There's absolutely nothing wrong with trapping, coloring books. I love them. I use them at my state association. There's nothing wrong at all with educating a grown man or furthering your trapping knowledge. But if we can reach these guys from, and you probably know better than I do the exact age, but I'm going to say from 9, 10 to 13, 14. If you can catch them through those formative years.
Start them even earlier. That window is 5 to 10 is where you're going to have the best chance of recruitment. Certainly don't want to exclude anybody, in those early teenage years.
Right.
excuse me, but it is critical. I mean, I had that, you know, I can remember before I even started school. I mean, mm-hmm. I wanted to go. I'd sit on the porch and I'd watch my dad, my granddad, my uncles walk. I mean, because we could hunt from the farmhouse mm-hmm. and just hunt forever. And I'd sit there on the porch in the evenings, I mean, waiting for them to come in. I just remember having a, you know, a long bow and shooting anything I could, you know, it didn't matter. And we got to make sure we don't miss that early recruitment
right.
age.
Right. Right. It's so important because that's the future and that's how we grow this thing because, we both started talking about our early careers and that just seems about maybe a year ago and here we are both grown men and we're, you know, we're kind of, it won't be long before somebody's got to take this mantle and push it forward besides us. And who's it going to be if we don't recruit these youth right now?
Absolutely. So.
Rob, you also do a podcast. Tell us a little bit about it so the guys maybe could follow you there.
Well, it's actually not a podcast. Mm-hmm. I do a weekly radio show through mm-hmm. Rural Radio, which airs on Sirius, channel 147. And it captures everything outdoors. It's Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World on Rural Radio 147. And it's on at 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 Central, and then replays again at 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 Central. And... you know, it picks up. I did two radio shows right here at the convention and really pick up on, you know, what's happening out there in the outdoor world. And whether it's hunting, fishing, trapping, a variety of conservation matters and issues. Covers everything from politicians to some of my redneck friends.
Awesome.
So, tune in every week. And this is our sixth, just finishing our sixth year. And... it's been a lot of fun, and I just invite all of you to join in and listen.
Well, great, great. Rob, I can't thank you enough for your time spent with us here. This is, I know the listeners have certainly enjoyed it on a personal level. This has been a highlight of this whole entire convention for me to sit down and talk with you. I know maybe unknowingly, you've mentored me for many, many years from back in the turkey days when I was really active in the NWTF to now. I always enjoy listening to you speak. We met several times in the past, and it just means a ton to me, and I know the listeners have certainly enjoyed the show, and I just want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for taking some time out of your busy, busy schedule to sit down and chat with us.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity. I thank you for what you do, and the excitement that's out there in a kid's eyes, and you know, I live it through my grandchildren now, and it's a responsibility that all of us have, and I'm so thankful for the time that you and all the rest of the board for the NTA, the people that give of their time, The greatest gift we can give to an organization, the greatest gift we can give to our children is our time. And I just salute you and all those that are out there listening that do give. And if you haven't given of your time, you need to right now. You need to step up because there's no guarantee we're going to have what we have right now in the days ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Guys, I appreciate you hanging in here with us to the end of the show. We've been going for when we sat down. Rob had asked me, "How long we need to talk?" I said, 30, 45 minutes. We've been going almost an hour.
So well, I want to say, look, as I close out all of my radio shows, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for answering the call, that call to conservation of a rich hunting, fishing, and trapping heritage.
Awesome. That's so great. Guys, thank you so much. As I close my show on when I have an opportunity to host Trapper Radio, I always close with this. And my favorite people in the world are the North American Trapper. It's a privilege and honor to hang out with you guys on Friday nights when you listen to these podcasts. It's truly, truly my honor. Thank you so much for listening. Clint should be back with you next week. And until next time, this is Chip and Rob closing up for Trapping Radio.
good Lord, good morning. Good coffee on the brew. A good loving woman, let me make good love to you. A good start to a good day. I grab my boots and my pocket change. Head out the door and down to the store and have a biscuit with the same old man. Yeah, let the simple things get me by. I won't let nobody blow my high. Hey, big time, you the bomb, but let me tell you something. This here your final warning. I done seen where you flew and come to early do. I'ma shoot you off the roost in the morning. Yeah, let the simple things get me back. I won't let nobody blow my high on life. Down that old dirt road, a six pack of what made Milwaukee famous and a cane pole, a shade tree in my daddy, a cool creek bank on my backside, a bobby dancing round a cypress knee come sundown, the brim gone fried. Yeah, I let the simple things get me by. I won't let nobody blow my high.